Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. In this episode, we'll be exploring how to deliver more impactful sales training. To share his thoughts and expertise, we are joined by Rob Moon. Welcome, Rob.
Good morning, James. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Rob, I really appreciate you taking your time to join us today. Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. Thanks, James. I began my sales career back in the late 1980s. So I'm showing my age a bit there. At Midland Auto Trader, the car magazine. So I was on the phone selling advertising space in the actual magazine, sort of pre-internet advertising days. After a few years there, I moved on to Yale, obviously Yellow Pages, yale.com, and I stayed there for 21 years. I spent 8 years in sales, doing the hard yards, the $150 a day and all that kind of thing, selling Yellow Pages, yale.com, Google AdWords, all of that kind of stuff. And then after 8 years in sales, I moved into L&D as a coach and a fully fledged L&D consultant, delivering sales training, customer service training, management leadership. And then I left Yale in 2014 to go freelance. And I've been running my own freelance company now for about 9 years and absolutely love it. I go all over the country, seeing all sorts of different types of organizations. Mainly doing sales training and amongst other things. So it's interesting and wide and varied, James.
Sounds like a fascinating evolution of almost that sales process as well over that time. And you've seen those changes from back in the day when you were selling before the internet. So with that extensive background, I know that you've sort of built some key differences into how you approach sales training, and one of those is your focus on sales instincts. Do you want to explain what you mean by sales instincts to our listeners?
Just the word instinct in itself, it's an innate behavioral reaction to a given stimulus, and we behave instinctively all day. When we're driving, for example, someone pulls out in front of us, we instinctively brake, move over a lane if we can, all of that kind of thing. And we do all those things instinctively. And what I've come to observe over the years is that salespeople react instinctively to stimuluses given by customers. It's this innate behavior. And what we've tried to do over the years as trainers, coaches, managers, etc., is we're always striving for behavioral change when we're doing training, get people to do and say something different. So we're trying to change the behavior. And I've been in some really wonderful sessions with other trainers as well. And the salespeople are agreeing with everything that's been said, and they're thinking, yeah, I'm going to go back, I'm going to use that with my customers. That is a great line. That's a great way of overcoming objections. I'm going to use that. But when they go back, they have trouble implementing it, because although they're thinking about their behavior changing, they're not thinking about their instincts changing. And that's why we have so much trouble implementing sales training. So it makes a real difference. Because when I go back to the coalface and I'm on the front line with my customers, those customers are going to be saying the similar things to me as they were before. And I've got to really be really disciplined to just put the new behavior in place. Instead of saying this, say that. But in the background, my old instincts are still there. So when a customer says certain things, my old behavior kicks in because my old instincts are still with me. And what I've tried to do over certainly the recent months and years is have more in-depth conversations with salespeople to help them see the difference between behavior and instinct. Because I think if you're coaching after the workshop, for example, and a sales rep reacts a certain way to a customer, in the old days would say, why did you say that? In the training, we guided you to say this. But now I take it back a stage further and say, what were you thinking a split second before you reacted to that customer? Because that's tapping into the instinct, not the behavior. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. I think you can recognize that we've got those instincts. And it's interesting you're talking about, you know, whether it's driving or anything else. And, you know, to me, you're asking the question of what are you thinking? It's maybe even further back than that, that you're not even thinking. You're just almost on autopilot. Yeah. So it's what are you feeling, you know, at those stages? So I can recognize that we all are sort of tuned to react in certain ways to certain stimulus or things coming in. So I can completely get the concept and see it playing out in all sorts of areas of life. And I know in this specific instance, we're talking about sales, and you're steeped in that sales process, and you're seeing where you see those instincts play out and how they play through. But do you want to, for our listeners, take them through the sales process and then overlay how those instincts might play out within that sales process? Because I think that'd be really interesting to look at how those two come together.
Most of the salespeople that I speak to invariably go through a sales process where they're having to, I'll use the phrase cold call, for the want of a better expression, sometimes, so that they're introducing themselves to new prospective customers. And once they've got past that engagement phase, they're into their questioning. So they do a fact find. And once they've understood the customer, they go on and present their solution, their products, their services, make a recommendation, and hopefully close the sale. That's a pretty bog standard sales structure. I always attach that sales structure to the psychological thought process that people go through when they're deciding to buy. Because one of the things that I say to salespeople is stop selling and just help people buy. And I really try and get salespeople to understand the buying process, not just the sales process. So when we're deciding to buy something, we go through that psychological process. So our attention is aroused by something. Does it retain our interest? Have I got a need or a reason to buy it? If I have, I'll find out about it. I'll see how suitable it is. And if the knowledge and suitability is working for me, I'll have a look at the price. And if the price is good value, I'll buy it. We go through that process as adults every time we buy something, whether it's a house or a chocolate bar, it doesn't matter. But we go through that buying process. So first of all, I attach that sales process and lock it into the buying process so we understand why we're doing each step of the sale. But these instincts kick in at various parts of the process. And they can even kick in before you even interact with a customer, because I think if your original mindset, if your original instinct is, I wonder how much I can sell to this person, versus an instinct that says, I wonder how much I can help this person. So as soon as you go change that instinct from wanting to sell to wanting to help, you suddenly become more curious. You dig deeper with your questioning. You come across more authentic and genuine. You build stronger relationships because you want to genuinely help that person. And I think if you change that initial instinct from selling to helping, you just automatically find that more people want to just buy from you, if that makes sense. And then as we go through the sales process, these instincts kick in all over the place. So, you know, when customers object, your instinct kicks in and you try and sell through objections instead of having an instinct that says, let's ask the curious question about why they're feeling that way. When you're doing your questioning, you uncover a little bit of a need and you start selling too soon. We do that instinctively. All of that kind of stuff kicks in. So I've really learned over the years to weave into all my workshops and the one-to-one coaching that I do that we have to strip it back from like we said before, the behavior and what salespeople are actually saying to customers, and take it back to what am I thinking and how am I feeling when a customer says something to me. And that's going to change my instinct. And then I'm going to do something differently, which is going to end up better for the customer.
And I'm guessing that starts with, like most things, awareness. So you're becoming aware that you're doing something. You're maybe jumping in and you know, like you said, I've seen it myself. We've been at Learning Tech exhibiting and we're opposite a stand, and there were two people on that stand who literally you could just see them go out, almost attack people. And just and they were just looking for any sort of buying signal that they could. And as soon as they were almost trying to close straight away. And it was painful to watch. And luckily their sort of boss pulled them off. Yeah, you know, so a couple of hours in and suddenly those people were in the background and not the ones approaching customers because it wasn't working. But yeah, you can see those instincts because they were so keen. Everything else was lost in the process. And by raising that awareness, that's a start. But, you know, as with any change process, there needs to be other things that we do from that awareness. Yeah. So what other tools, approaches and techniques have you seen or would you suggest that people can take once they've sort of recognized or seeing those instincts maybe not working for them?
I think one of the biggest examples I see of this, James, is salespeople who sell to their customers how they would like to be sold to, if that makes sense. And when we're having the coaching conversations afterwards, they say things like, well, if it was me, I would like the salesperson to do this and this and this. And one phrase I use with lots of salespeople is we have to move ourselves out of the way, because not everybody wants to be sold to like I like to be sold to. And that's why in virtually all of my sales training and workshops, I always introduce insights discovery into the equation. I'm a licensed insights practitioner, so I can use that tool. And what that really teaches us is the self-awareness you spoke about earlier, and then it helps us understand how to recognize other people's behavior and almost make that assessment whether they do behave and communicate like me or whether they're different to me, and what do I need to dial up or dial down about my behavior so that we have a better interaction and we get on better. So that helps me adapt and connect to more people. So this instinct we have about selling how I like to buy, basically, that will only work on people who are like me. But there's probably 3/4 of the population that aren't like me. So I need to understand their type of behavior, and then do things in a way that they will appreciate. We've all come across that old saying, haven't we? I treat others how I like to be treated, and everybody tends to agree with that comment, and it's been kicking around for years. I actually disagree with it vehemently, in so much that we should treat others how they prefer to be treated, and we can only do that if we have this awareness of the impact I have on others, and this understanding that I can observe somebody else's behavior without making a judgment about whether I like them or not, but just observe that behavior and then sell to them in a style that they will appreciate. That in itself is an instinct that goes against I sell how I like to be sold to, sort of thing. So I think insights discovery is a great tool. And of course, lots and lots of good quality training and coaching. There's many, many great coaches and trainers out there. So please go and find one that are prepared to take it to that next level and not talk just about behavior change, but talk about instinct and feelings changing. Because obviously it's the emotion, the feeling that comes first, and then the behavior follows. So we can't change that behavior unless we really think about these instincts. And we can only do that by really immersed coaching.
And I think, you know, you've talked about some really interesting things there. And you know, a little bit back, you mentioned curiosity and curious questioning and that ability to want to go deeper and not want to just look for those almost reactions that, you know, I'm just looking for a signal. I'm looking for a buying signal. I'm looking for an engagement signal. I'm looking at a very surface level. And that curiosity, because, you know, we speak to people right across lots of different disciplines, across HR, etc. And that true curiosity is starting to become more and more of a theme. If we look even at things like diversity and inclusion, things like that, it's, you cannot just assume that the surface level information or what you're being presented is enough. You've got to delve deeper. You've got to be curious. You've got to question. You've got to, you know, again, step back from trying to achieve your aim and get yourself into that. But, you know, we're saying instinctively that's maybe not what a lot of people will do. Maybe people aren't that interested, you know. So just the challenge back, if that's not where I am, that's not my instinct, how on earth, you know, do I actually change to be interested and curious in people? Because I see people who do it all the time naturally, and they're going to ask questions there, and then there's the other people who are on emit mode, and you know that curiosity is not part of them because they're about presenting, etc. So how do you get someone to almost go from that I'm the salesperson or the person telling everyone about myself all the time, about my products, about how wonderful I am, to suddenly being really curious about my customer? If it's like a feels like a 180. So how do we get someone to make that progress?
I really believe, James, that you need to show these salespeople that question and sell in that way the impact and consequences of what they're doing, and almost help them feel the difference in a conversation. When I'm talking to salespeople about their questioning techniques, I always say to them that 9 times out of 10, a salesperson will question. And when you're listening to them question a customer, it's like a stone bouncing across the water, skimming the surface. They just skim from one question to the next. And what they're doing is they're qualifying their customer. What they're not doing is understanding their customer. They question to qualify, not understand. And what I mean by that is they ask only the questions that mean this customer is right for me. You know, they've got the budget, they need this thing, so why aren't they buying from me? So I only ask those kind of qualification type questions. And what I say to them is, instead of being a stone skimming across the water, throw a brick in and go deep with that questioning, and treat each question that you've got now and turn that from a question into a topic of conversation rather than just a single question that just bounces into another question. Have topics of conversation. And some of the questions that I get people to think about are things like, what makes you say that? How important is that to you? What impact would that have on you and your business if you could achieve that? Because what I try and get salespeople to find is what I call the need behind the need, if that makes sense. When we only ask qualification questions, we get rational needs. What we also need is emotional needs. What difference is that going to make? How motivated are they to do something about it, to change that situation? What's the impact going to be? And once you start asking impact and consequence questions, in a way, the customer starts selling to themselves. So if you said to a customer, if you can imagine a time then when that pain goes away, you've got something different in place that's much better quality, supported with a better level of customer service, offering better for value for money, what impact would that have on the business? Oh, wow, that's great, because that would mean we could grow that area. We could increase headcount into that department. We could do this. We could do this. They're selling to themselves. And in a way, what we're doing by saying certain things to customers is almost changing our customers' instincts, because they're human as well. They have instincts. So when a salesperson says a certain thing, that's their stimulus for their instinct to kick in. And currently, too many salespeople say certain things that make the customer feel guarded, and they want to protect themselves from this person that's trying to sell to them and not help them. So in a way, we've got to try and manipulate and control the customer's instincts as well. And we only do that by having great conversations. And one of the many controversial things I say in my workshops is there's no such thing as open questions. There is no such thing as open questions. Leave it now. I was trained open questions in 1988. That's a long time ago. Yeah, surely we've moved on. Surely now it's just about having a very high quality conversation, because just because a question starts with what, where, why, who, which, when, how doesn't make it a great question. So we've got to have this thing that I call conversational competence, and have better quality conversations with our customers that they enjoy, that they feel are different to what our competitors are doing. And once you have that great conversation, and you're there to help, and your instincts are ones of curiosity, and you're throwing a brick in, and you're delving so much deeper, you're asking these impact questions, you're getting the need behind the need, that conversation just grows arms and legs, and your customer reacts to that. Their instincts change, they start to open up to you, give you more data, more information, and all of a sudden they're asking to buy from you, because they start to trust you, because they feel listened to, they feel valued, they feel important.
It's interesting you talked about sort of open questions being, you know, trained to you in the 1980s. And I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, as humans, we've been buying and selling stuff forever. It's part of the human condition. So as we're sort of where we are, and you're saying, you know, you're focusing in on instincts and tapping into that, things about trust and going beyond conversations and quite tactical selling or mechanical selling approaches. What do you see as sort of the trends or changes that we're seeing as humans in how we approach that, both that selling and buying, you know, mechanism?
I think certainly if you go back and think about Insights Discovery, and those people listening that have got any awareness of Insights Discovery, if you go back to when I started my sales career back in the late 80s, if you did an Insights Discovery profile on lots of people back then, they would be that fiery red, that pushy, aggressive, you know. And we can think of certain industries over the years that we've almost pigeonholed with that type of selling and all of that kind of thing. And I think these days it's become, and I hope it continues to become, about building better relationships and having those better quality conversations, so that now the slower pace of selling comes to the fore. Because sometimes if you slow down, you get a result sooner, if that makes sense. I think patience is important in salespeople these days. They rush to the end of the sales cycle because they want to know if they're going to get a sale or not, and they rush from one no to the next no, if you like, and that's not effective or efficient. If they were to slow down, somehow that speeds up the process. And it sounds weird, but it just naturally does, because the customer's more in tune with you and they're bought in, and they pick up on how suitable your solution is sooner, because you're connecting it not just to the rational need, but their emotional need. That kind of thing. I was with a group of people that sell houses for a very well-known construction company a few days ago, and we were talking about this. And in their questioning, I talked to them about the fact that if you're genuine and interested, when somebody says to you, we need a really nice, big, open plan kitchen diner. So in your head, you think, yeah, I've got a house that's got a nice, big, open plan kitchen diner. I'll show you that. But don't stop questioning there. Why do you need that? Well, we entertain, we have friends over, we do dinner parties. We've got a separate dining room at the moment. And sometimes the children are in the dining room doing homework and I'm in the kitchen cooking and I can't see if they're getting on with their homework and all of that kind of thing. Right, okay. Then when you take them into the show home and show them the big kitchen diner, it's no longer a case of this is the kitchen diner, what do you think? Or is it big enough? Those rational things. You walk in the kitchen diner and go, can you imagine your dinner parties going on in here? That's a much more emotional reaction. And if you engage emotionally, that's the side of the brain that makes the buying decision, the emotional side of the brain. So we have to get the need behind the need. And we're only going to do that moving forward, like you say, with trends and coaching and all of that, is if we do take our time and understand customers better and not just qualify them.
I think that's a really interesting point almost about storytelling that you've just touched upon, because you're there, you're able to go into the kitchen diner and talk about the dinner party, talk about the two kids with their names doing homework here. You know, you can paint that picture for people. And it's something I'm not in a pure sales role at all. You know, it's obviously part of my role, as it's part of most people's role in some way, shape or form. But, you know, a lot of what I'm doing is consultancy and process change. And it's a similar thing. I'm not trying to sell them a product. What I'm trying to sell them is a new way of working or change in process of some way. And it's one of the things I've learned in my career is that people aren't very good at painting the pictures or storytelling for themselves. And you have to put probably a lot more work than most people realize into it, because it might be quite obvious to you because you're in that mode. You're in, you know, you're selling, say, a house all the time. So you can recognize when someone gives you a buying signal, you're already joining the dots and doing this stuff. And then you're expecting the customer to be like you, unable to join the dots. And sometimes you need to put far more work into that storytelling elements, and you need to, you know, like you said, not just the one buying signal, but almost take it from 20 different directions, and then someone can start painting the picture themselves.
There's another thing that I always talk to salespeople about, and it's one of three or four quite controversial statements I'll use in my workshops. And I tell salespeople, stop telling your customers how good you are. That seems a daft thing to say to a salesperson. But instead, tell your customers how good your other customers think you are. So instead of, we're great at this, we're always good at that, we get, you know, we're fantastic at this, and you're blowing your own trumpet, just bring in kind of a third party approach and just reframe how you deliver some of your features and benefits, if you like, by starting sentences with things like, do you know what, James? One thing our customers really love about working with us is the fact that we do ABC. What they constantly tell us is the benefit they get from that is XYZ. I'm not telling you now what I think. I'm telling you what my other customers think. And these days, we live in a world of reviews. They're everywhere. There's Trustpilot, Google reviews, all sorts of stuff going on. And we're just storytelling. It's simple storytelling. Instead of delivering just features and benefits about me, of course I'm going to love my own company. They pay my wages, they pay my commission, they pay my bonuses, all of that. Of course, I'm going to, you know, sing their praises. But if I can deliver things in that third party style and say to you things like, one thing our other customers really love is, and we also get great feedback on ABC, XYZ. Another thing our other clients really enjoy about working with us is And I'm telling you what everybody else thinks and not what I think. And just that alone, the feedback I've had over the last 12, 18 months from people is, you know, delivering your product and solution in that style, it really lands with people. It really lands with people, and it makes the world of difference. And it can be tiny, tiny changes in how you deliver sentences, phrases that just land differently, and they enter the ears of your customer differently. You're putting in different words, so they, you know, the words go in their ears, they use their head to process it, and then they make a decision. They can only process what goes in their ears. So let's put some good stuff in their ears, as it were, and make them feel good about what we're trying to help them with.
And if our listeners have been listening to this conversation and they've had, you know, a light bulb moment, or they've thought, actually, you know, I am instinctively jumping in at the wrong place, or my instincts are pushing me to do some of these things we've highlighted.
Mm.
Give us a couple of starting points that someone can take away today. You know, I realize my instincts aren't working for me. What can I go and do differently?
I would say, if you're selling on the telephone, the one thing that lots of people are very uncomfortable doing, but I think it's an absolute must, is listen back to your own calls and critique your own calls, and you will spot when you're doing it, and you'll listen back and you'll think, why on earth did I say that then? Get your manager or a coach to observe you in action. If you're selling in the field, take someone with you that knows what good looks like, so that they can help you get on that first rung of the ladder, which is this awareness of what we're doing. Because it's not until somebody actually points it out to us that we're even aware that we're doing something not quite right, or we could be doing something different. So I would definitely say, listen to your own calls, take somebody out with you. But also, the other thing that really gets me scratching my head about salespeople is they don't practice, or they don't practice enough. And what I mean by that is, and there's quite a nice little story actually from a few years ago. I was with a young lady in telesales, and we'd spent a couple of hours listening to a course, and we'd done some coaching. And she said, I've really felt that today's been so valuable for me. It's going to really make a difference. And her last words were, I'm going to go and practice that on my customers. And it made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And I went, hang on a minute, just play that back again. You're going to actually practice on your customers? Really? No, you're not. Your customers deserve the polished performance. If I bought theatre tickets tonight to the West End to see Les Mis, I wouldn't expect the director to butt in after 10 minutes and shout, cut, reset, let's go again. Sorry, audience, bear with me. I haven't bought a ticket to a rehearsal. So use your colleagues, use your teammates, use your manager, use a coach, use the bedroom mirror. Practice. Please practice.
I think that's a great message, and we've got so many tools now that we can video ourselves really easily. We can record Absolutely. Ourselves, you know, the tools that maybe 20 years ago when I started my career weren't available to everyone are now ubiquitous, and you've got as part of your arsenal. So you should be able to go and pick up some of those messages and get on with it. So I think some really valuable lessons coming out from that, Rob.
Yeah, and they're doable. They're really doable. Well,
that
should be anyway.
No, and that's, you know, been really insightful. And I think there's some, you know, great step back and think moments in what you've shared with us today, and some nice practical steps as well, to so that people, it's not just a nice bit of theory, it's actually some stuff that people can go and do something about. So, you know, I really want to thank you for joining us and sharing your thoughts and expertise. If people have been inspired, how do they get in contact with you, or follow you, or find out more about your approach?
that can, of course, find me on LinkedIn, Rod Moon Training. I'm on Instagram, Rod Moon Training, Facebook, Rod Moon Training. Or if they want to send me a direct email, they can do. It's rob@rodmoontraining.co.uk. There is a website, rodmoontraining.co.uk.
Fantastic, Rob. And what we'll do is make sure that all of those links are in the show notes below the podcast. So once again, Rob, thank you for taking the time out.
Thanks, James. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if The Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.